Welcome to Faith Church Peshtigo Podcast.
You can connect with us online at faithpeshtigo.com. We're also on Facebook. Just search for Faith Church Peshtigo. Today's podcast features a conversation between Pastor Jay and Pastor Robbie talking about the sermon from May 30th, 2021.
We're gonna fly by the seat of our pants.
Oh, gosh. Least favorite
thing. It's going to be great. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast.
No.
This is Jay, one of your hosts. Joining me is a very begrudging Robbie Helene.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here with you.
Do you think they heard your no?
It's possible. Likely picked up on both mics.
Here's the issue. Robbie likes to be prepared.
Yes.
I feel like preparation just confuses things.
Well, that's telling. Jay and I are very differently wired. And so he loves, hey, let's just fly by the seat of our pants. And that sends a twinge of shrieking horror down my spine because I do not operate well in that environment typically. And it's Jay's favorite. So I find myself in said environment more often than I am comfortable. But it's not about being comfortable, Jay.
It's not.
I'm just not going to grow if I'm you driving. Don't keep making me uncomfortable.
That's right. That's true. Hey, well, so sometimes planning is good. So yeah, sometimes. I had a big gaffe this weekend because, you know, we're only doing a small thing like changing our service time for the summer and moving outside next week.
Remember the time when you didn't say anything about that?
Yeah. On said
Sunday?
Nothing on Sunday about it. In my defense, we had some big things going on. So
yes,
but in my non-defense, that was a pretty obvious thing that I should have mentioned. And that's so okay. If anybody's listening to this week, meaning the week after May 30th, what is it?
2021. So if you're listening to this 40 years from now, since these will most certainly be archived and replayed, this will not be relevant information for you.
This will not be. But we are meeting outside at 9:30 on June 6th for one service outside.
2021.
Yeah, 21. And by one service, I mean each Sunday. So the whole summer we're meeting outside.
Yes, correct.
I just can't say
it. Did you say at 9:30 a.m.?
9:30 a.m. 9:30 a.m. in the morning.
On Sundays.
On Sundays.
Each Sunday consecutively.
Here at the church in
In Peshtigo, Wisconsin.
Yes. So sometimes flying by the seat of your pants is not such a great thing. I should have prepared that. But for this, for the podcast, I think it is. It's amazing. So you preached randomly on 1 Samuel.
Yes.
And you didn't even say why you were preaching on 1 Samuel. Like, why are we just all of a sudden having
We had this kind of floating Sunday, right? Because we just finished the series on 1 John. And then next week, we have the nice, clean transition of the first summer service outside where we're going to start our summer series going through the Psalms, or several of the Psalms, not all of them. And so we kind of had this floating Sunday, and so it was a great opportunity to be able to just preach on something that I was excited about.
And were you excited about it?
I was excited about it.
It seemed like it.
Yeah.
And it was good.
Yeah, I've been actually kind of geeking out on the Old Testament a little bit recently. So I was excited to be able to just share some stuff that the Spirit challenged me and encouraged me in, and so it was a good opportunity to be able to share some of that.
All right. So, well, here, if I'm driving this fly by the seat of our pants train,
you are.
What does that even mean?
You're the one at the wheel of this vehicle that is completely out of control.
But why does it? What does that mean?
What's flying by the seat of your
pants? Root, did I just make a board?
No, etymological.
Oh, etymological, that's right. Root of fly by the seat of your pants.
First of all, I'm impressed by you dropping etymological right now. Well,
glad
done.
Glad you have such a high opinion.
Big fan of etymology.
Yeah, etymology is great, man.
Or where words come from.
Oh,
those
should,
of you who have no idea what that word is.
Well,
I don't know. I do not know. Maybe a caller can. Do we have callers in the show?
Yeah, we could take
we'll take
live,
a call right now. A call. If somebody knows.
If you know, seriously, send us an email. I mean, we could. Google it. This is back, like we're going back in the old days. We're like, well, who could possibly know that?
I would rather not Google it. I want to receive an email from a listener who can explain to us, especially if you can do it without Googling it. Bonus points.
Oh,
if you can do it without Googling
it. You know where that comes from.
But I'll never know if you Google it or not. But if you know why what does that mean, flying by the seat of your pants?
Yeah. I always find those phrases fascinating because they have some meaning. Like there is a some point
it
where
meant it something meant at something. Some point. Maybe Doug Smith understands that.
I bet Doug
he
does.
Is an aviator after
he's a
all.
Crash so test might. Pilot.
Dude, wait a minute. No. I think they try not to crash.
Yeah, they try not to. They don't want to. Right. He's not always a fan of that. I like that it got you. Like you even went along
it
with
did.
It.
It did. I had so. The... Wait, is no. he? No, he's not.
He tests things.
Correct.
They don't
he
crash.
He doesn't crash them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so we are going to fly by the seat of our pants. This look how well
clearly
it's going.
Clearly we
look
are.
How well it's going. I feel like, why do we not do this all the time?
So many reasons.
All right, so we're going to start doing that. Next Sunday, we're just flying by the seat of our pants. Everybody. Worship team doesn't even know what you're playing. Just jumping up there and saying, all right, let's do this in G.
All right.
Play a blues riff. Try not to get lost.
Some people might love that.
That's Back to the Future.
Try not to get lost.
Try to keep up. I think, I don't know. What
try to keep up. Yeah.
Try to keep up. All right. Try to keep up, Robbie. I've got some questions. Some things you said in the sermon that I'm like, let's hear more about this.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to giving unprepared responses to your questions.
Yeah. So the number one question. You said,
sounds so leading.
You said,
this feels like an interrogation.
Yeah, it does. Like, yeah, interesting. You said God giving you what you ask for is not necessarily an endorsement.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Here's what I love. I threw out like 3 or 4 half-baked ideas before we just jumped into this.
Yeah, and this was not one of them. Nope, thanks for leading.
I'm leading with a zero-bake idea. But you said yeah, that it's not necessarily... So we kind of think... Like, yeah, just unpack that a little bit more. How do we respond to that, this idea that, okay, God giving me what I ask for? Why don't you recap, like, what did you mean by that? And then I can ask some...
Well, it was in the context of Israel in 1 Samuel asking for an earthly king, and objectively, God as your king is better than a person as your king. So it is a worse plan for everyone to have an earthly king at the expense of the living God of the universe. So it's not good, right, for him to, in one sense, for him to answer that. In our perspective, we would say, well, that's wrong. And so obviously God would say, no, that's a terrible idea. And yet he says, okay, yeah, give them exactly what they're asking for. Not out of cruelty, but in a sense, like God will often, has often given me, there's no etymology for gived me.
He's
gived
you words to.
He's given me allowed me to experience things or given me things that I've wanted that I've ultimately realized this was actually not great. But the blessing is in having the realization of, oh, this is not at all what I was expecting this to be. This is not better than God. This is not better than his plan. And then I would argue like the most extreme example of that is in Romans chapter 1 when Paul describes the wrath of God as giving him exactly what you asked for. Like, so all these people say, like, we don't want you. We only want earthly stuff. And Paul says, so God, in his wrath, gave them exactly what they wanted. They said, okay, you want to be your own gods? Here you go. Like, I will no longer intervene, and I will allow the consequences that you are essentially wanting to come upon you. So it's not biblically unheard of, certainly. And I could, you know, there are moments just anecdotally in my own life that I can look at and say, man, I thought this was a great idea and God allowed that to happen. Turned out it was not a great idea. And through that, I can see what he taught me in that. And, which I wouldn't be able to do necessarily if I just viewed it as, well, obviously it was the right thing to ask for because God said yes, because whenever God says yes to my idea, that means he's communicating to me that idea was awesome.
Right, which I think a lot of people, I think we we often think that way. So like when we say things like, well, if God didn't want me to go down this road, he would have shut doors.
Right.
And I've thought that at times. So how do you keep that from messing with your mind as you're trying to discern God's will? Like, how would you differentiate between if somebody says, okay, I'm trying to figure out, should I move my family? Should I take this other job? Should we, you know, whatever, any of the things in our day-to-day life, should we adopt a child? Should we, how does that play in then? Like what should we be aware of? Or how does that play into our seeking God's will? If we're allowing ourselves to think like, well, if I ask for this, God might say yes, even though it's bad for me. Is there a difference in there? Is there something that's, cause I would, yeah, I think what I'm thinking of is the person who says, I want God's will, so now I'm terrified to even ask for anything, because what if I ask for the wrong thing and then God says, all right, well, you asked for it, here you go, and it's actually not good for me.
Well, that assumes that God's going to give me something that's ultimately not good for me, which would be a denial of the scriptural promise that God is working all things to the good of those who trust in him. So good eternally versus good for me right now are two mm-hmm. different categories. The other aspect is, I mean, and this is really, you're asking a really nuanced question that requires a lot more thinking before I answer.
That's why we fly by the seat of our pants.
Right. So this, I need something other than the seat of my pants to be flying by on this. But the first thing that popped in my head as you said that is, to me, there's something fundamentally flawed in the idea that is discerning the will of God defined by him affirming my choices. Like if the will of God is, oh gosh, how do I know that I'm making the right choice right now? Like, how do I, like, I need him to affirm that I'm making the right choice right now. I would argue that's a misunderstanding of the will of God. Like what the will of God, as he has articulated over and over again, is much, much more transcendent than that. And if the goal is, well, I'm supposed to do everything, whatever I do, including eating and drinking, whatever I do under the glory of God, that is his will for my life, then it's not a matter of, well, is A the right choice or is B the right choice? It's, am I pursuing Christ and his glory above all else in this? And if I'm doing that, that's what enables me when I get to the other side and I go, okay, from an earthly perspective, that was a bad choice. But God allowed that to happen. So what good was he working out of that? It wasn't to affirm that I'm great at making choices. That was not the good that he was trying to accomplish in that. He was trying to accomplish something better in that. So with Israel's case, he knows this is a really terrible choice, and this is going to end horribly for you guys. Ultimately, I'm working out something that you can't possibly wrap your brains around that is so good through your bad choice, which is ultimately Jesus becoming the king over all of his people. So he's not going to do something bad. It's not like the choice results in, oh no, now God can only provide bad for me. But that doesn't even become a question when I stop seeking for God to affirm my choices. Like that's the way I discern his will, that I know that I'm making the right choice, and instead going, my choices are so trivial in terms of his sovereign direction and power. It's just, is he glorified in this? Not did I make the right choice? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the key parts of that is what are you seeking? Are you seeking, the correct choice, or are you seeking Christ and his kingdom?
Yeah.
And so if I'm presented with a job opportunity and I'm trying to seek, if my heart is seeking, should I do this or should I not? I'm not seeking the correct thing. And that's where my desires can get wrapped up into that. And the reality is we can kind of make anything seem like we feel like God is leading us to do that.
Yeah.
You know, because once you kind of convince yourself that this is this thing I want. And if it's really this thing I want and this is the thing I'm seeking, then that's the thing that will seem right to me. That's the thing. And so everything is going to get manipulated. And
right.
I mean, I have in my life, and I have heard other people say, like, I thought God was like leading me down this road. And when you look back on it, you realize, well, none of those things are anything of God. You just kind of right. manipulated all of those circumstances. But if I'm seeking the kingdom, if I'm seeking Christ, if I'm seeking glorifying Christ, and so then if my question is, okay, how am I glorifying Christ at the job I'm currently working at? You know, because that would be an example. If you're not glorifying Christ in your current job, you won't be glorifying Christ at your next job.
Correct.
If you aren't glorifying Christ in how you use your current house, you won't glorify Christ in the next house. And so that's where I think when you're talking about some of these decisions that we make to be so monumental that are actually pretty trivial. And
right.
when you realize that God's goal is sanctifying us and our heart work, then I think you can start to see why in circumstances, like if my heart is attached to this thing over here, then God may very well give that to me, allow me to have that so that it can come crashing down, so that it right. can leave, so it can be empty, so that then I'm freed from that. And other times he may take that desire away. If I'm seeking Christ, then I find that my desires for some of those things that I thought were so strong, when I turn my attention to Christ, they become less. But I think it's good to make sure that I see so often I see Christians paralyzed by this idea of like, I just want to know what God's will is. And I think what we see in this passage that you preached on is this, how much sense it could make, you know, for the people of Israel to say, like, if we had a king, this would be so much better. If we were like other countries, like, you want us to be this great nation. You want us to be like, and so this is how we can accomplish that. Right. And I hear myself in that. I hear other people in that. Like, how many times have you know, if you've ever thought, okay, well, you want me to be generous, so I need to make more money.
Right.
So I need to, if I'm going to give, like, making money is a good thing because I can give it away. So therefore now I've justified the pursuit of money, even though, yes, we're called to generosity. Yes. If you make money, by all means,
right.
use it and don't feel ashamed of that. Like, use it and be generous. And,
but to your point, to your earlier point, if you're not generous with what you have, you right. will not be generous when you have more of it.
No, never. And yeah. No. And so God's people, if they weren't faithful to God as their king before they had an earthly king, they weren't right. going to be any better. And of course we know that they were not.
It got it didn't, much worse.
Yeah. It didn't help matters at all.
Right. And those earthly kings for the next several hundred years led them further and further away from serving their true king.
Yeah. Which is so interesting. So not only is this, we sometimes God gives us what we ask for, and that's not an endorsement of the, or not a confirmation or an affirmation that it was actually a good thing to ask for. I think, I just lost my train of thought. This is what happens. We fly by the seat of our pants, Robbie.
It's true. Got to keep that thing on the rails.
What were you talking about?
What were we talking about? Yeah. We were talking about God giving you what you ask for is not necessarily an endorsement that was the best thing, you know, to ask for.
They asked for it to be, oh yeah. I just find it striking how often we think we know what we need to be able right. to honor God.
Right.
Like, that's such a consistent theme in our lives, I think, and in scripture of, okay, God, you want this from me. This is what you call me to do. So this is what I'm going to need in order to accomplish that.
Right.
And so whether it's our health or financial success or obedient children or a good marriage or whatever it is, we think, well, God, in order for me to do the things you're calling me to do, I obviously have to have this, 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 and this. And so it really becomes about this thing. But if you're not, I mean, it's just such a good thing to constantly remind ourselves of anytime we are faced with any of these decisions, that if you are not honoring and glorifying God in your current situation, then the problem isn't your current situation.
Correct.
You won't be doing it in the next situation either.
Because like Peter said, we've already been given everything yes. required for life and godliness.
Yeah.
We have already been, if we are in Christ,
yeah.
we have everything that is required to walk in full and absolute surrender and full God glorifying and joy inducing obedience to Christ. Like there's nothing that we are lacking that is preventing us from walking in that. So it is always an internal, it's always a heart issue that's preventing me from doing it. It's never an external obstacle. But I forget that. And so I come back to, well, God, I know you want me to do this. And so if you would just answer this temporal issue, then that would allow me to do this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we can sometimes kind of misunderstand and cling to scriptures like, I mean, set your heart upon the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart, right? So you go, all right, well, I'm trusting you that you'll give me the things that I want, not understanding that saying, if you set your heart upon the Lord, he will give you the thing your heart desires, which is the Lord,
right.
Because that's what my heart is set upon. Like,
right.
If you dwell, if you want me more than anything, I will delight in giving you me.
Right.
Not if you delight in me more than anything, I'll be happy to give you all of the stuff that you really want, which is not me. Which, like, would make that a self-refuting statement. But
I think. Do you think there's a way though in which, you know, you think about in Romans 8, where he did not withhold his own son, how much more with him will he graciously give us all things?
Right.
I think there is, yes, on one hand, I totally agree with that statement that yeah, when all you desire is Christ, then he will give you all that you desire.
Right.
And, but I think that there's also then it's the opposite of when Paul says, I suffer the loss of all things. We also then receive all gifts when we are seeking Christ, because now, you know, when Paul talks about the loss of all things, you know, you're saying like, I'm dying to all of these old desires. Yeah. I suffer the loss of finding my identity in all of this in my education or in his situation, his status and education and his works. But then in doing that and being raised with Christ and walking with Christ and seeking after Christ alone, he then receives back the joy of some of those gifts, some of the, like, you know, relationships and friendships. And now he's actually able to enjoy those things in a
Absolutely.
Way that he couldn't before. And so I think it's both. Like, he gives you the desires of your heart, and in that, yes, he gives you, like, when your heart is set upon the Lord, then he gives you himself, and he honors that. That's
right.
What you want more than anything. But then with that, he gives us all things. Like, you receive,
which I can now receive
right.
properly
yeah.
and understand in the proper context, right? Because of,
which increases my enjoyment of it.
Exactly. Because I'm no longer dependent on those things. I can simply enjoy them as the gifts that they are. I mean, Jesus says, seek first the kingdom of God and all these things will be added unto you. Like, seek this. And, you know, C.S. Lewis paraphrases that, if you seek earth, you will receive neither heaven nor earth. If you seek heaven, you will receive both heaven
right.
and earth. Like,
yeah.
that idea of when really what I desire is the stuff, then I don't really get the stuff or Christ, because the stuff ends up not satisfying at all, because it's empty.
Yeah.
And I lose Christ. If my pursuit is Christ, then when I receive that stuff, I receive it in its fullest form, and it's not this dependence where I'm just counting on that thing to sustain me or save me. I just receive it as a gracious and glorious gift from my Father that I can enjoy with him. Because it's being with him that's the better thing. And
right.
now we get to share in this thing together, and I have family to share that with. I have friends to share that with. I have, like things are in their proper context.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a silly illustration that I've used before with that is if my kid wants to go for ice cream, if that's what they want more than anything, and their heart is set on that, then I may give it to them or I may not, but it's not going to fulfill them. Like, they're
right.
if they have it begrudgingly from us, you know, or they're grumpy about it, But if they realize, like, being with me, for example, like going and hanging out with me is what they really want, well, then I give them that. And then if we happen to go and get ice cream in that, they're able to enjoy that ice cream in its proper context. And now it's actually this wonderful gift.
It's ice cream with dad.
It's ice cream with dad. Yeah. And, but if we went and got, you know, a brownie or a, you know, to go get a pop, as it were, or a soda. I don't even know what people say up here right now.
I mean, Midwest, so it's supposed to be pop, right?
It is, but I've heard both up here. Hmm. But anyway, then it doesn't matter because it's with, you know, it's with dad. And so I think there's that, there is just that understanding of seeking and saying, okay, God, wherever I'm with you, like wherever I'm abiding in you, that's just where I want to be. And then you realize, like, I can do that anywhere. And so now it doesn't matter where I work. It doesn't matter, you know, if we go where we go on vacation. It doesn't matter if I buy this thing or I don't buy this thing. Like, if I'm glorifying God in my buying or in my not buying or in my going or in my staying, like whatever I'm doing, if I'm seeking Christ, then that is the desire. Like, that is what God is doing in our hearts. Now, I would ask this, that, okay, so the passage talked about Israel wanting a king. Now, we could talk about that, but I think, because I do think that is actually more relevant now than it has been in a long time. Like, I do think that more and more people are looking for some kind of governmental structure to deliver, like, to make them, to the, thinking that something like that will make them holy. Because remember that, you know, the people thought, like, okay, God, this will help us follow you. So, that, I mean, that feels like it rings true right now. And, like, hey, this, yeah, God, give us this. If we have this this authority as a nation, if we have this kind of these rights or these freedoms or whatever, then I'll be more able to follow you, which is the same lie that is there. So there's big picture stuff like that. But then I think even in our everyday lives, we buy into that in other ways. So I think about like the false promise of time. God, if you gave me more time, my problem is I'm too busy.
Right.
If you gave me more time, then I'd be able to follow you. If you gave me more money, then I'd be able to honor you with my money. If you gave me a better environment, like better people around me, then I would be able to honor you better. So what would you say to somebody practically in any of those, if any of those spark your interest here as we're in our pant seat flying?
I mean, I would just come back to Peter again and say, if it is true that he has already given us everything that is required for life and godliness, everything that's required to glorify God in everything that we do and everything that we are, you know, with the understanding that, like, that's all going to be tainted by sin to some degree, right? So not to live perfectly, but when I'm not living perfectly, it's not because God has withheld something from me. Mm-hmm. It's an internal, it is always an internal issue. So, I mean, I think we would just come back again to the, if the issue is I don't have enough time, we have to acknowledge every person on earth is allotted the exact same number of hours in the day. Like, it's not like this faithful sister over here has 36 hours in her day, and so obviously she can accomplish more for the kingdom than I can because I only have 24. We're simply making choices with what we have. I am choosing to invest my time in one thing versus another, and view the things that I don't have control over. Like, I get scheduled for 12 hours a day. I don't have any control over that. That's my job. Well, rather than saying, well, so I can't serve God until I get a schedule that allows more free time, if I believe the promise that he has given me everything that is required to walk in obedience to him, then I should be viewing in that as, well, why would God want me to be here for 12 hours?
Right.
There must be something he's intending for me to accomplish here if I'm supposed to spend this much time here, right? So it's not, I it's so easy to look at circumstances and go, well, I can't do this thing because of what I'm doing. And the first step is, what are all the choices I'm making? Like, how much time am I just burning? How much time am I spending on the internet, on Netflix, on whatever, you know, all the stuff like that? How much time am I investing into hobbies or things that are non-eternal? Like, there are things that are obviously, like, I'm choosing A versus B. I would rather do A than B. But then we have things that are beyond our control. We have life circumstances. We have physical illnesses, or we have job requirements, or we have restrictions that are beyond our control that restrict us in a sense. But can we get to a place of saying, like, if I'm truly seeking Christ the most, and he's not giving me this thing that I think would be better,
right?
Clearly he thinks where I am right now is in one sense better, or at least he's doing something in me in this and is expecting something of me in this.
Yeah, I think part of the issue is this divide between the sacred and the secular,
yeah,
and the belief that, okay, well, there are spiritual activities.
Yeah.
And so often we've heard, well, I wish I could spend more time in, you know, I know I'm supposed to be reading my Bible and praying, you know, having a quiet time, giving. And so there's just this feeling of like, well, I don't have time to do all those things. And I think what we find is, yeah, if you, and the promise is, if I fully pursue Christ today, then I will find that I actually have, that he has given me all that I need.
Yeah.
And he's provided me with every opportunity to glorify him. Now, the problem is, of course, I don't do that. And so, yeah. So that's where we get off track. But the problem isn't the amount of time or money or the environment that I'm in. The issue is internal. And we need to, in some ways, redefine spiritual activity. So understanding that, yes, I can change a diaper to the glory of God. Like, I can care.
Yeah.
Like, I'm participating in his work of his caring for his creation and providing, providing this care and this love for this being that is completely helpless, you know,
yeah.
or I'm working, you know, if I'm on a factory line or whatever, that I'm being a beacon of light and that I'm a source of joy in, you know, the break room or with the guy, you know, next to me. Like, I can honor Christ in everything. And if that's my mindset, then I find that I actually have a ton of opportunities. And then to your point, if I am doing that all the time, well, then when I do have free time, then if my mindset is I want to honor Christ with my free time. If I can break apart from, like, well, you know, that only means these certain activities, but I can say, no, I can go fishing to the glory of God, but not in some artificial way that I say I'm going and doing what I want and pursuing this thing I want and then calling it spiritual or saying,
right,
you know, but it's actually in abiding in Christ, I am able to receive. Like, if he gives me an afternoon and I can receive that from him as a gift from him, well, then I can go and I can do that. And it actually will be restful if I'm doing it seeking him, or take somebody with me and that's meaningful or fruitful.
Right.
It just looks different. And so if you're the single mom with small children and you're running from job to job and running kids around or whatever, then your honoring and glorifying God in that day is going to look very different than the empty nester who is retired, who, you know, has a very different life rhythm. But that doesn't mean that you are less able to glorify God and that someday you'll be able to have the time and the money and the environment in order to glorify him.
Yeah.
I think that key theme here is just be faithful. I mean, it's almost as if the Bible talks about that, being faithful in small things and then receive greater things.
It may or may not exhort us to make the best use of the time.
Right.
Right, that we have before us. What just popped in my head as you were saying that, Jay, is I would love to know. I don't know if we can take a poll how we'd figure this out, but I would love to know, of all the people in the last 5 years that have become newly connected to this church and introduced to the gospel, maybe for the first time or in a, you know, an efficacious way, in an effective way, for the very first time, in a transformative way, I would love to know how many of those people were reached by somebody going door to door in their free time and randomly evangelizing people versus how many of those people got connected to Christ and this church through work, coworker. Yep. Because like the first 10 people that popped into my head, I know all of them, 100% of right. them, 10 out of 10, connected with somebody at work who throughout the whole day as they're interacting with them, they're modeling Christ, they're demonstrating him, and they're communicating him. And then at some point, that conversation leads to, well, I think you need Christ. I think you need Jesus. And, right. and why don't you come hang out in this environment? It's people who, right where they are, not in this imaginary free time that we think is going to be conjured up, but right where they are saying, why spend every day with you? I should tell you about Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that's not, I mean, either work or extended family yeah. or youth activities. It's those connections and those places. Right. And so not only is the things that we think are barriers to us being able to be more spiritual, not only are they not actually barriers, they're actually the vehicles
right.
through which God is the platform.
Why God placed me there.
Yeah, that's why. And I think so much of that is there's a trust issue in this. Like, do I believe God that he has actually given me everything and he has placed me here? And look, this isn't to say that you never should change anything, like that it's sinful right. to take a new job or to move or whatever. That's not the point at all. It's seeking Christ in that. And I think it comes back to some of those such basic things of, do I believe that God is good? Do I believe that he is sovereign? Does he have control over this? If I do, then do I believe that he is a good father, or do I see him as an overbearing boss? I've used this several times, but it's so striking that when how many of us live our lives as if God, that we have to protect ourselves from what God would yeah. ask us to do.
Yeah.
Seeing him as this overbearing boss who will just like take as much time as we'll give him. If I don't protect some of my time, if I don't protect some of my money, he's going to ask me for all of it.
Right.
And that's going to be to my destruction. Or do you believe Jesus when he says that his yoke is easy and his burden is light? That it's not actually burdensome
right.
to follow God and right. to do what he has called you to do.
It's a blessing.
It's a blessing.
That's right. the abundant life.
Right. And I think we have a hard time believing that because yeah. I just think I know better. I just think I have yeah. a better picture of what abundant life is. And I understand and I picture the life that God has for me as it's probably really like it's just these other definitions. That's probably really hard. It's probably really boring. It's probably really like, yeah, it's filled with all these things that I know I should do,
yeah.
like eating vegetables that I don't like, but I do it so that I can go eat cake later. And that's just these are just deeply seated, deeply rooted misconceptions of who God is. Now that doesn't mean it's not hard in a worldly sense. We talk about persecution all the time.
Yeah.
But there's a reason why Paul can with all integrity say, I can handle any of these circumstances in Philippians, like to say I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, saying I've been sick, I've been healthy, I've been had a lot, I've been without anything, I've been like all these different things. But in all these things he realizes that in pursuing Christ, I can handle any of these other circumstances.
Right. Not just handle them, right. but Paul, Peter, and James, at least, all say, like, consider it joy yeah. when you encounter these
it
trials.
Thrives in that.
Right,
in
because God's doing something right. extraordinary in you and through you in those moments. So not just I can endure them, I can actually get to a place where I can delight in them because I know that there is glorious purpose in that.
Yes. Yeah, and I think, so if you're in a situation where you feel like you can relate to the people in Israel and saying like, God, I want this. Like, I would just encourage you to just consider, what is it I think that I need in order to follow God better? And then just confront that and say, okay, then what I'm saying is that God hasn't given me everything that I need. That the Bible isn't true
yeah.
when it says that we have been given everything in order to live a godly life. What circumstance do I think I can't glorify God? What do I think I'm lacking? And confront that, and then ask God for help to glorify him in the midst of even what you think it is. So whether it is in that marriage, it is in that friendship, it is in that family situation, it is in that workplace, it is in that neighborhood, it is in, you know, whatever the case is, your kid got assigned to a sports team that you don't know anybody on. You didn't get on the team that has all your friends. And so now why is he there? Like, okay, God, if you'd put me with these other people, then I would have been more effective. Like whatever it is, just confront those things, confront those as lies and saying, okay, God, you've placed me where you have. And now I'm to honor you in this circumstance. I'm to glorify you and to seek you in this circumstance. And then, like we said, that then opens up freedom for other things then to change. Because again, if you aren't glorifying him on the baseball team that your kid is assigned to right now, then you won't glorify him in the one when you you think, you know, you're with other people. Or
right.
If you aren't glorifying God in your job now, you won't glorify him at the next one. We used to say that about hospitality was a big thing. We used to say, like, because Lauren and I tried to be hospitable. In fact, you know, right. The very first people we ever invited over to our home in California were Robbie and Stacy. And that's a whole other story. That was very fun. But we just confronted the idea. It was so easy. And living in Southern California, we lived in this rinky dinky little place. Like our place was even smaller than your place. And
our place was small.
And your place was small. And we had all these people around us who had these beautiful homes that they would invite people over. And Lauren and I had to confront this idea where we said, well, we're not the ones who should be hosting. We have this tiny little condo that nobody, there's no parking. How are people even going to get in here? And then we just got confronted with this idea of, if we're not hospitable in 700 square feet, we're not going to be hospitable. We wouldn't be hospitable in 7,000 square feet. It doesn't matter. And we learn God takes us through these paths and teaches us how to be faithful in these circumstances so that then we can go on and do other things. So
there's a saying in India that it's not the size of your heart, or it's not the size of your house, it's the size of your heart. That in hospitality cultures, like the size of your house is meaningless. And so we've crammed a dozen people into a room that is literally the size of this office that we're in right now, and you are shoulder to shoulder, practically on top of one another, and that's just normal because hospitality is so ingrained in that culture. We can learn a lot from that idea of, it's not the size of the house that matters, it's not the circumstances, it's the heart and how I'm choosing to use those circumstances or withhold those gifts that God has given me, the actual gifts that I have right now.
Well, I hope that has been encouraged. See, flying by the seat of our pants wasn't so bad.
No, that was fairly painless. I don't know if it was beneficial. Hopefully it was. If it was, please let us know.
Maybe it... painless, not painless for the listeners.
Correct. I would love to end with the passage that we referenced a dozen times, just so people understand we're not flying by the seat of our pants when we throw out scripture references, because that's a big deal. So in 2 Peter chapter 1, that's the verse that we keep referencing, Peter writes, "His divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of him who called us to his own glory and excellence, by which he has granted to us his precious and very great promises, so that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature," which that could be a whole series in and of itself, "having escaped from the corruption that is in the world because of sinful desire." And then he goes on and said that amazing passage where he talks about, for this reason, supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue, like all the things that we should work hard to pursue. And then he says, if you're not doing that, it's because you've forgotten the gospel. So when we disbelieve that we have actually been given everything that is required for life and godliness, it's because we've forgotten the gospel. Mm-hmm. We believe that it's something else. Either something else is required of God or something else is required of us. And we've forgotten the gospel. So
I hope that's encouraging to people as you're listening to this, that the great joy in this is you can be generous right now, regardless of what your economic situation is. It is not dependent on that. And so if you ever feel burdened or you feel like, I wish I could give like other people give, but I don't have any resources. You can be generous and you can actually have that impact. It may be a smaller dollar amount, but God will give you opportunities to be generous, and you can do that. If you feel like you're in a season of life where you don't have as much time and you wish you had more time, like other people seem to have more time, like, yeah, maybe there's something in your life that you can simplify. We're big on simplifying and not running yourself ragged on that, all that. But take heart in knowing that you absolutely can pursue Christ in the time that you have, and that all of your time, every waking hour, can be redeemed to pursue Christ. And you can honor him, whether it's in changing a diaper or working on a line or running kids back and forth to wherever. You can honor Christ in that. And whatever environment you're in, you can be light. So if you look at and you are saddened or discouraged because you look around and you think another environment is worthy, more worthy of that, you'd be able to shine brighter or whatever, the reality is you can shine where you are. And so I hope that's an encouragement and not a heavy yoke, but an empowering and an encouragement to say, like, God has placed you there, and being faithful to him and pursuing him in that moment is the greatest thing that you can do on any given day.
Amen to that. Thank you for listening. If this stirred anything in you and you have follow-up questions or you want to know what this could look like for you personally, we would love to hear from you. So you can email us, you can call, you can catch us on a Sunday morning. We would just love to hear from you. We're so grateful to have this opportunity to be able to have a conversation that hopefully you are blessed and encouraged by. We love you, church. Grace and peace to you.